So hello, welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup.
You know, we all celebrated the defeat of Donald Trump this week by Joe Biden on Saturday.
I think we even have a picture of Chelsea boys celebrating properly masked in Chelsea here in New York.
Right.
And there they are.
Yeah. And our guest is activist, journalist, and novelist Tim Murphy, who's going to tell us about his work on the ground in Pennsylvania, getting out the vote.
President-elect Biden, there's a nice new phrase, his COVID task force includes veterans of AIDS work and out gay whistleblower Dr. Rick Bright.
Many more wins for LGBT candidates across the nation to report on,
including an out gay mayor in San Diego.
And where am I? The first LGBTQ member of the House in New Mexico.
A pioneer lesbian feminist elected to the Senate in Puerto Rico.
And a lesbian sheriff in Charleston, another lesbian sheriff.
In the United States, yes. A gay man beat a Proud Boy for a seat in the Hawaii legislature.
And moving on to international news, and the Italian parliament voted to protect LGBTQ and women's rights.
And we have more great results in a study of an HIV preventive vaccine.
Marguerite Littman, who founded an AIDS charity in the darkest days of that pandemic, has died.
And an LGBTQ marching band will be in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade for the first time.
And there is going to be a parade this year, yes. So,
well, maybe we should question why they want the LGBTQ marching band out there.
Let's bring in our guest novelist, journalist, and activist, Tim Murphy. You there, Tim? There he is.
Yeah, Tim's
come on,
coming.
Let's see your picture too. For those of you, I mean, we know Tim as an activist, but of course he's also a great novelist. He wrote the New England Meets the Middle East novel in First Christadora. Christadora, 2016. Four decades in an East Village building. And the other novel he's known for is New England Meets the Middle East in Correspondence in 2019. But you also write for New York Magazine, New York Times, POS Magazine, etc. Welcome. But the reason we're having you on here is because you, from New York, went out to Erie, Pennsylvania with your comrades to work on getting out the vote for Joe Biden. You went out there. I think the picture we have, if we can show it, out there in the is with Kevin Herzog.
With Kevin Herzog, who is one of the three co-founders of Gays Against Guns, and then with our friend Edwin Pabon, for whom, and there's Edwin in the back with the doing this, and I think it was actually his very first sort of political thing he'd ever done, and you can see the ducks of Lake Erie right behind us all squawking for Biden Harris.
And, Canadian geese, I believe, Tim. You don't get out of the city much.
Oh, they're geese. Okay. All right. Well, the winged life forms.
Yeah.
Other than pigeons.
Yeah.
Now, this is the first time you've done this. You did Columbus, Ohio 4 years ago. Gave up on Ohio, I guess. So you went to Erie, Pennsylvania. Tell us what it was like being out there and trying to get out people in a district where, you know, you met a lot of Trump supporters.
Yes. Well, we were there for a whole week, and we were very lucky that we had a benefactor that put us up at the Marriott Bayfront Courtyard. So after long, hard days of being absorbing emotional abuse and hostility from Trumpers, we were able at least to come home to a king-size bed with a high thread count sheets and a beautiful view of Lake Erie. But it was very, we decided to go to Erie County because I think Kevin and I were both really hankering for that on the ground experience that we shared with many New Yorkers in the Columbus area in 2016, which ended, grimly. But it was an amazing, prior to that, it was an amazing experience. You know, we really felt like we were sort of at ground zero of one of the places that was going to decide the election. So we really had a hankering to do it again. So I did a little research of, you know, I think I Googled top 10 battleground closest counties in the U.S. And Erie County was the closest to New York. It was 7 hours by car. And the next closest was the Toledo area, interestingly, which was another few hours. So we decided, let's go to Erie. And, you know, also, I should say, Erie is a really wonderful city. You know, it's right in that little bit of Pennsylvania that's on the Lake Erie, like right between Ohio and right between Cleveland and Buffalo. And, you know, it's just a great, you know, if I were a disgusting gentrifier, which of course I'm not, because I'm very attuned to those issues, I would say it's a city that's really ripe for gentrification because it has great housing stock and a beautiful lakeside setting. So just to set the mise en scène for you, Erie, politically, Erie is could not be more right down the middle. I mean, it really is that classic place, that northern industrial kind of white ethnic town that was, you know, reliably Democratic forever that Trump swung, you know? And so, it, you know, polls show that it was right down the middle, and boy, it sure felt that way on the ground, you know? Especially when we were in, they placed us in, you know, the Erie County Democrats, our new friends there. They're all terrific. Hey, Chelsea. Hey, Jim. Hey, Katie. We're all like this now, besties.
Yeah.
They placed us in, you know how it works now. It's all done over an app, minivan, you know, and they cut these lists and they just keep refreshing these lists based on the data and recalibrating them. So they would send us, you know, on any given day, they'd send us to the urban core neighborhood, which feels a little bit maybe like being in Bushwick or something like that, or some part of Queens, to very middle class suburban neighborhoods, you know, little monopoly type houses, and out into the rural area, which is really not that far. It's just like 10 minutes outside the city. And particularly in the suburban middle class neighborhoods, which were mostly, not entirely, but mostly white, the 50-50 was so palpable. I mean, you'd have a Biden yard sign and a Trump yard sign and then no yard sign and then two Trump yard signs and then maybe two more. But then you turn the corner and there'd be four Biden yard signs. And then so you really felt this sense that we never feel here in the city of, I guess, basically Democrats and Republicans living right alongside each other, you know. So, you know, for us, very often we were going up to houses that I think they were algorithmed as likely Democrat because they were democratically registered. But with no yard sign, we never really knew what we'd get, you know. So it was really just like Russian roulette all day long. You know, if the people, assuming they were home, and a lot of people were home too, which isn't surprising because of COVID.
Right.
Assuming people were home, you know, it could be a very firm, solid, yep, Biden, no worries, guys. You know, we got to get that guy out. Or it could be, you know, then you'd get the more cryptic, like, we're voting, thank you. We're voting, bye, that's my private business, you know. And then we'd get, no, sorry. You know, we'd either get sort of a hostile, get out of here, I'm voting for Trump, or sometimes a polite, you know, like, sorry, guys, I'm the other side, you know, good luck. We got a cop, a hot cop. A hot guy, I should say. And he said, no, we're a cop family. So we're on the Trump side, but good luck, guys. And I was
did you have any actual conversations with people?
Well, yes. And we did. And I wanted to get to that. We had more conversations with undecided or confused people than I really thought we would, you know. The one I remember the most is a very nice lady, very nice white lady. And she came out in her, Bomba socks or what I think, you know, those socks.
Nice.
So we kind of bonded. Kevin is really great at the small talk. You know, he's like, I love your Bombas. And then we couldn't shut her up, you know? So she came out and she said, guys, you know, I don't know. I'm just so confused. I really don't like him. I really don't think he's a very nice man, but I'm very pro-life. That's very important to me. And, you know, and I really don't, I'm not interested in having a pro-life, pro-choice argument with someone, you know. Yeah. And I said, well, but you know, I think the thing that we said to people that really kind of struck them the most was we'd say, we came all the way here from New York City to do this because our vote in the presidential really has not a lot of value. And you're really privileged that your vote here really can decide this election. So, you know, please just look at the whole picture, you know, look at the whole climate, the whole tone of the country right now. Ask yourself how you feel about it. You know, and we hope you, I mean, we never really tried to make someone say they were gonna, you know, vote Biden-Harris before we left. We'd sort of leave it that way. And I think that woman was like, well, okay, thanks guys. I'll really give it a go. You know, we had another fellow who said he didn't really like both, but the last thing he said to me was, look, I won't vote for Trump. All right. I'll give you that. And I went, I can live with that. And we kind of did a faux high five. And so it was a really interesting array of responses. And then we were kind of in the urban core, you know, neighborhood. It's like, I didn't really know how much advance work the party or any nonprofits had done in those neighborhoods to get out the vote, to register people, et cetera. So this is not in any way a reflection of what they did or didn't do, because I really don't know. But it did seem like we just met many people who were just disengaged, just very disengaged. You know, they weren't registered, or they weren't even sure if they were registered. And by that point, if they weren't registered, there was really nothing we could do except to urge them to register for 2022. But it did make me very curious about, you know, a lot of people say, you know, traditionally, the party, not nonprofits, but or campaigns, but the party itself has not put the effort into raising, you know, heightening the vote in kind of urban, racially diverse neighborhoods, which these neighborhoods were, as opposed to, you know, desperately trying to get back these fickle swing voters, these white, mostly white swing voters, you know. So I thought about that a lot, and it made me want to really research more, you know, just how true that is and just how much work has been done. If there is some equivalent of Stacey Abrams' group in Pennsylvania, like Fair Fight or New Georgia Project, I did not come across them. They did not come up on our radar during this trip.
And yet, people of color, of course, delivered this election for Biden, and he managed to peel off a handful of evangelicals and apparently a bunch of Catholics in order to do this. But of course, it was mostly people of color.
Yeah, well, it wasn't in Erie County, because Erie County is mostly white. So, you know, I don't think the kind of tremendous energy that we saw in places like Atlanta and Philadelphia, you know, among people of color applies to Erie. I think we were mostly, you know, we were mostly interacting with those white folks who are kind of right in the middle, and they sort of go like this on either side of the line.
Well, every vote is important. But I do wonder, to your point, how much work the parties do, Democrat or Republican, to actually gin up anybody for these elections. Are they just shell games, or is there any real work being done?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, all we saw was the interface that we had with the folks at Erie County Democrats who were running the canvassing, and they were wonderful and very nice, but I can't speak to how much advance work in any demographic in that area had been done.
Well, it was the highest turnout election since 1904, wasn't it? I mean, you know, it was a huge vote. I mean,
yes.
Biden got the largest vote in history, obviously numerically, and the country has grown. But what shocked me, of course, was that Trump expanded his vote.
Yeah, it really felt like a bare-knuckled fight to the finish, you know. And in an odd way, that's something I applaud on both sides in a way, you know, just to see like those high. I mean, of course, I would prefer it had been more lopsided in terms of participation. But, you know, there was something very rousing about feeling as though in the final week we were playing this little role, you know, in a fight that really felt like a battle royale. You know, I mean, there was such high levels of engagement, you know,
in
most neighborhoods.
Yeah. Did you only talk about Trump, Biden and Trump, or did you, I mean, for instance, I mean, we didn't take back the Pennsylvania legislature. We lost House seats, U.S. House seats. Did you talk about those other races?
We did. I mean, it's part of the package that they send you out with, you know, and they asked you to, they ask you to also, you know, ask, you know, you have this little app, you do it all on your phone. So you're sort of clicking yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And so, you know, you're supposed to ask, you know, do we have your support for Biden Harris? Yes, no. And can we count on your support for the down ballot Democrats in Pennsylvania? Yes, no. And, you know, most people seem that they vote straight down the ticket. A few people said, well, I'll vote for, you know, Dems for some and Republicans for others, but they wouldn't say for whom or, you know.
And did you end up with any new insights about Trump voters?
I mean, one thing I thought about a lot when we were in the rural areas is I think there's a mentality of, you know, like in the rural parts, like people lived so far apart, you know, I can sort of understand in a way, if you've lived in that environment your whole life, you have very little sense of collectivism, you know, and of the idea of the need for public things, you know, and public works and public healthcare and just the idea of like a social compact, you know, because you're kind of on your land with your gun, with your dog. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I thought a lot about how would, I mean, other than decency, you know, like how would you expect, for example, with all of the protests over racial justice this summer, you know, how would you expect someone, you know, other than some very general sense of decency and fairness to have a palpable sense of that fight, you know, any more than we really spend much time thinking about the plight of coal miners or dairy farmers or something. You know, I just think that if certain kinds of people aren't in your life every day and up in your face, like they can really easily be an abstraction, you know? So I don't understand how you would, you would get very rural people to have a greater sense of collectivism, you know, in terms of what, you know, there's a very strong sense of like, get off my land and leave me alone.
I mean, it's utterly understandable how they see government as more of an interference than a help, although many of them are getting subsidies that are not acknowledged.
So, Tim, you have hope for Georgia. Absentee ballots are going out on November 18th. People can still register there in Georgia until December the 7th, and they have early in-person voting on December 14th, and the runoff is on January 5th. Two crucial races that we have to win if Mitch McConnell is going to be removed as the head of the Senate.
And if we want to pass anything, you know, even a halfway decent COVID relief package or a public option added to Obamacare and other ways of shoring up the ACA. And it's so funny, you know, I feel like I have a lot of friends in like the Democratic Socialists of America, you know, DSA, mostly younger friends. And I mean, I just feel like this.
I think we lost you for a second.
How much do you work with? Oh, really? Still?
No, you're back. Still? You're back. Yeah. We can hear you now.
Okay. Good. I was just saying that, can you hear me still?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That, you know, this election really just throws into relief this question of how much you work with or try to work with the other side, you know, versus, I mean, I feel like I believe more and more it's really just a matter of raw power, you know, and it really is just about that voter, that getting out that vote to the, you know, to the levels of this election over and over and over again, and just taking winner take all, you know. I mean, I don't know. I think it'll just be very interesting to see. I don't feel terribly optimistic about, you know, despite his high level of nice guidance and his friendship and Biden's friendship with McConnell, I don't feel terribly optimistic about the possibility for collaboration and Yeah.
Well, I was happy to read that John Kasich doesn't want to be in the cabinet. So that'd be good, because I can't stand, you know, I mean, there's some of them I just absolutely cannot stand.
And I don't think it gets us anywhere. And I think the Republicans have exercised raw power, particularly in the last 4 years, but starting, I think, in the Reagan administration. And I think it has been going downhill. So, but, you know, if we have 50 senators, we're going to have to worry about members of the Democratic Senate who hold us up, too. But we still want it.
Yeah. I mean, at least, you know, I mean, as I was reporting, working on a story yesterday and talking to some healthcare advocates, and they were saying that at least the endless assaults on, you know, LGBTQ rights in the healthcare sphere, on healthcare in general, you know, at least these endless assaults that so much time and money and energy went into legal battles and on the ground protest battles, just constantly fighting off the worst, you know, at least that is somewhat off the table. But, you know, I mean, anyone would be naive to think that, you know, it's all going to be peachy now. I think it's a really, I mean, for what I took away from this, election cycle was that when amazing people, you know, when we all do the work led by amazing people like Stacey Abrams, you know, and really do the work, like we really can turn things around, you know. I think
Georgia is gone. I mean, they did do a poll a couple of weeks ago, just one-on-one, Warnock, who was the Democrat, the minister, against Loeffler, the Republican, and he was leading 45-41, and that's encouraging. And I think that it can build on that. And also, Trump won't be on the ballot in January 5th. So I think it's possible.
I think it's very doable. I think really we have to normalize this idea that like this level of do or die turnout has to just become the norm in every cycle, including midterms and including state and local elections. It's just, I mean, I hate to say it, folks, but it's just, it never ends. It's an endless slog.
I thought it would go much better, especially in the states, but it hasn't. And Republicans are going to get to draw the lines again in a lot of those states for themselves and for the House delegations. So it's tough.
Well, it's true. It's going to be an endless fight. All right. We're going to get back to fighting. Tim, you get back to fighting.
Thank you for everything you did.
Thanks for having me on. As I was saying to Anne before our segment started, I'm just so honored to have finally made it onto Gay USA after all these years. I remember when I was just a little twink cruising Andy in Chelsea because he was such a hot daddy. And he still is.
And we're still here.
And you
saved the election for us, Tim, by going to Pennsylvania.
Stop. All right, I'll take that.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, you too.
Thanks a lot.
After Georgia.
Yeah, all right, we'll see.
Take care.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay.
Back to the rest of the world.
Well, let's see. We should point out that President-elect Biden has immediately formed a COVID task force, and a bunch of people connected to AIDS work are on that task force. It looks pretty good. And Dr. Rick Bright, an out gay guy who was marginalized by Trump when he spoke out about how terrible they were doing, and they marginalized him. They couldn't fire him, but he quit eventually. And so that looks encouraging. If people will listen.
Yes, and certainly the vaccine news is it actually made me happier than the election results, because I want out of this whole dark cave. But we really have to be cautious. It's a very small study result so far. All they've given us is a headline. They haven't given us any details of the actual trial. So while even Fauci is quite optimistic, the fact is we have a long way to go on this vaccine.
And it has to be stored at minus 94 degrees, and we don't have the infrastructure. But, I mean, that's the kind of thing where, you know, I mean, of course, Trump is trying to use the military to hold on to office. But, I mean, that's where you want to deploy the Defense Act and get all these sub-freezing things in place.
Well,
all across the country.
There are other vaccine candidates that don't require that level of freezing. And one also has to wonder whether we got this headline because this company wants to get out ahead of the others because it is such a difficult vaccine to administer.
Right.
And the president of the company sold a lot of stock as the stock market went up on this news. So what's going on there? I would just say, don't stop wearing your masks and don't stop your social distancing or your hand washing quite yet.
Okay. And Jill Biden, who has had Karine Jean-Pierre as her top aide in the campaign, is she's Karine Jean-Pierre.
I thought she was Kamala's top aide.
Oh, well, am I getting this wrong? All right. I thought she was picked as her chief of staff, but maybe it's.
Well, she may have been. She may have been, but she was working with Kamala during the campaign.
Never mind. We'll fix it next week when our guest co-host will be Maren Johns.
Oh yes, the return of Maren Johns. That would be exciting.
But I am sure of this. In Biden's victory speech, he was the first person to give a shout out to transgender people.
Yes.
And that was something because transgender issues were used against Biden and every Democrat in the country.
We've been trying to figure out the LGBT vote in this election, and there are so many different reports of high votes for Biden in gay neighborhoods, less high votes in polling. It's all a mess, and we don't really know. Certainly, we know that the LGBTQ community supported Biden at what exact level, we don't know. And why we're turning to polling now, after all we did was yell at the polls for the election results, is a mystery to me.
Right. I mean, Manhattan went 85% for Biden. Philadelphia's gay neighborhoods, 84% to 92%.
Look, Manor, we could run and we'd get 85% of the vote in Manhattan. The Victory Fund endorsed just over 300 LGBTQ candidates. About 200 of them so far have won election. There are a good 40 that are still outstanding. We will have 9 members in the House by adding Richie Torres and Mondaire Jones. Everybody else has won re-election. We think Sean Patrick Maloney's race is still a little up in the air, but he's winning at the moment, and we retain our 2 senators in Tammy Baldwin and Kyrsten Sinema.
Right. I mean, Tom Suozzi, who's not gay, out on Long Island, was behind in the initial count, and now with some of the absentee ballots, he has won.
Well, I'm also hoping that for Lauren Underwood in Illinois, who's a fantastic freshman congresswoman who is pulling ahead in her race.
Let's talk. Should we talk about some of the
races? I have to mention a loser first, Donna Shalala.
Yeah.
I'm going to propose
it. Think she'll come out now?
No. But I'd like to propose that when you stay in the closet, you give up your authenticity. She was beaten by a woman, Maria Salazar, who's an ex-TV reporter, Cuban immigrant. They'd run against each other 2 years ago. Shalala won it for the Ileana Ross Lettinen's Republican seat in Miami. And Salazar won this time.
We did a lot better in 2018 overall, of course, a much bigger House majority. And we thought we were going to expand it, and we didn't. So Trump sort of had coattails. But a lot of these candidates got in Senate and House. They got more vote than Trump did.
All right. So let's start running down some of these other races that we didn't get to last week, starting in San Diego, I think.
The new mayor is an out gay man, Todd Gloria, 42 years old. He won the runoff there with 56% of the vote. And he over council member Barbara Bry, who refused to condemn the anti-gay smear campaign against Gloria. One of the things she used against Gloria was his vote in the assembly simply to equalize the treatment of LGBTQ and non-LGBTQ young adults when it comes to whether their offenses put them on the sex offenses registry. Gloria had been an interim mayor of San Diego in the past when Bob Filner resigned in disgrace.
He is Latino, Filipino, and Native American. And as we say, out gay. I also want to give a little shout out to my friend Marnie von Wilpert, a great progressive Democrat and daughter of an old high school friend of mine who flipped the 5th council district in San Diego from Republican to Democrat. Big win. And now we have 8 Democrats out of 9 on the city council in San Diego.
Well, staying in San Diego, but on the county board of supervisors, Tara Lawson Renner was elected. She describes herself as a gender non-binary pansexual, but uses female pronouns. Strong progressive, arrested protesting the Iraq War, fights dirty fossil fuels and private prisons, and wants wholesale reform of the criminal justice system.
And also in California, Alex Lee, 25 years old, out bisexual, elected to the assembly, first out bisexual, I think, in the California state legislature, lives at home with his mom.
Well, and was working for an app delivery service to make ends meet, and said that all made him an effective advocate for others struggling economically. The district encompasses San Jose, Santa Clara, and Fremont. He had also worked in legislative offices prior to this.
In New Mexico, Roger Montoya, who we told you about earlier, because he was being attacked for having been in a couple of porn films 35 or 40 years ago, and is out HIV positive, youth worker, runs an HIV support group, is an
artist, dancer,
60 years old, won his seat in the New Mexico State House, the first out LGBTQ person in the New Mexico State House.
In 2019, he was one of CNN's annual heroes. Okay.
Back to California, another little point of personal privilege. In Watsonville, our dedicated longtime viewer, Steve Trujillo. Hi, Steve. Was elected to the Board of Trustees of Cabrillo Community College. And
60% of the vote. He beat an 8-year Republican incumbent. Promises to advocate for LGBT issues on the board and tells us that 3 new LGBT officials were elected in Santa Cruz County. Also, Jimmy Dutra to the Watsonville City Council and John Laird to the California State Senate. Steve has been a tireless advocate for the LGBTQ community.
Hopping over to the East Coast in South Carolina, in Charleston, lesbian Kristen Graziano, Democrat on the right there, has been elected county sheriff. She beat the longtime
guy.
Well, when she announced she was going to run, he fired her. She worked for him in the sheriff's department. So she went out and beat the pants off him. Not literally, I hope.
In the Trump administration, they're firing people who are applying for other jobs.
I would think they'd be grateful for that because it would finally give them some credentials that would allow them to be hired elsewhere, because the news today is no one from the Trump administration is getting hired anywhere, as you might expect.
Well, and Puerto Rico, I have a picture of her, Ana Irma Rivera Lassen, 65 years old, elected to the Senate, out lesbian, first black woman and third female to head the Bar Association of Puerto Rico. She's a real progressive activist.
Highly honored feminist and human rights activist. Also, Puerto Rico elected 2 gay mayors and 1 gay member of their house.
Right. And these advances come in a year when 6 trans people have been murdered in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
In Colorado, David Ortiz is the first out bisexual elected to the state house. And then we go to Hawaii, where Tam, out gay, 28 years old, elected the only out LGBTQ person in Hawaii's state legislature. Got 63% of the vote versus an opponent from the Proud Boys, who was posting offensive views on blacks, Jews, and LGBTQ people. Tam was harassed during the campaign, but he prevailed.
And in Georgia, at least 7 LGBT people have been elected to the state legislature, some incumbents, some new. We told you about one or two of them last week, but the total is now 7. They are all genders, all races. It is an amazing rainbow of people in the Georgia legislature.
Palm Springs is going to have the nation's only bisexual mayor. The post rotates among council members, and in line is Christy Holstedge. She's in line for the job.
In West Hollywood, the city council has seen some turnover. They have 5 members, and 2 of the longest serving were John Duran, who served as mayor for a while, and John Heilman, who is one of the originals. They were both beaten in their races. John Duran has a little checkered history with some sexual harassment charges. And the 2 new members of the city council are an Iranian lesbian, who was the top vote getter, and a young gay man. And now the West Hollywood City Council has 3 women of its 5 members.
Okay.
Which is quite a turnover. So I also just made a little list. We talked briefly to Tim about how things may or may not be different in a Democratic administration, but here are some things to think about. Trans people in the military, I would assume Biden would reverse Trump's attitude very quickly. The Equality Act, which we're really only going to pass if we can, emotionally blackmail Susan.
Right. I mean, Biden said this week, within my first 100 days, we'll pass that. Well, the House will again, but said it?
Well, again, Georgia, Georgia, Georgia. He's going to have to reverse all the non-discrimination garbage that Trump did getting rid of all the non-discrimination protections. Biden's going to have to put them back in, and he can do that by executive orders. Right. He's also going to he has said he's against this religious discrimination leeway, and so he'll have to tackle that. Healthcare, well, certainly we're encouraged by what happened at the Supreme Court hearing this week, where it turns out that Roberts and Kavanaugh look like they will uphold the Affordable Health Care Act. Immigration, he's got a lot of work to do there. And of course, racial justice, which he has also promised to address. So keep your eye on those and probably a million other topics, but that's just a small thing to remember, a small list of ways in which life can be different in a Democratic administration.
And yes, Karine Jean-Pierre is indeed, of course, Kamala Harris's chief of staff. She is, Kamala Harris is the first woman to win national elective office in the United States of America. That's a big...
That is big, but you know, it is a progression, a tiny one, but there have, from Geraldine Ferraro to Sarah Palin to Hillary Clinton, and Shirley Chisholm wasn't nominated, but she certainly threw her hat in the ring earlier than any of them. But we now have finally elected someone, and it didn't come out of the blue. We've been building towards this slowly but surely.
Well, you talked about the things that are we hope to happen under Biden. James Essex wrote for the ACLU, our lawyer friend, wrote an article about how concerned they are about the attacks at the state level now that they have all these Trump judges. That the state, you know, we always talk during legislative season, which starts in January, all the bills that the anti-LGBT bills that could be passed, some of them will be passed, and they could be upheld by some of these anti-LGBT judges.
Well, and back to the Supreme Court, I've been reading more of the aftermath of the Fulton versus Philadelphia argument last week on Catholic services and adoption in Philadelphia and violating non-discrimination laws and still taking city money. And people are not optimistic that this court is going to rule against Catholic services.
Our lawyer friend, Art Leonard, a professor, sees them not overturning the 30-year precedent that Scalia set of religiously neutral laws of general application being overturned, but still that they will find a way to find for Catholic social services to let them not have to deal with gay couples.
And historically, we know that give them an inch and they'll take a mile. When the Hobby Lobby case was decided some years ago, everybody said, oh, this really is just about one small family-owned business. Well, of course, that principle has been widely applied. And if this court gives Catholic Services any leeway on this, I fear that it's going to be used much more broadly. So I'm not, I don't think trying to be incremental on that is going to be much help to us.
It could be another decision sort of like Masterpiece Cake Shop, where they ruled that there was government hostility to religion when it came to this group. But we're just trying to say, if you're a contractor, and we have laws that say you can't discriminate, you ought to abide by them. So the challenge to the Affordable Care Act, I listened to the whole discussion, and as everybody is pointing out, it looks as if it will be rebuffed by the U.S. Supreme Court. Roberts was not on board, nor Kavanaugh, and we don't even know where Amy Coney Barrett stands on it. So the ACA could be preserved for now.
For the most part, you know, we're still, I mean, they've zeroed out the penalty, so it may not matter, but that's still on the...
That could be declared unconstitutional, a zero penalty.
It could. All right. New York City, the...
Well, can we finish up on Trump?
Go right ahead.
One of his pastors, Bishop Harry Jackson Jr., one of the most famous anti-gay bigots in Washington, D.C., gave the closing speech at the Republican convention, has died. Now, they're not giving the cause, but he was at the leading super spreader event for Amy Coney Barrett. He was 66 years old. We've talked about him a lot over the years.
And Robert Jeffers, another just flagrantly right-wing pastor who's been a big Trump fan, has called for Trump to accept the results of the election for Biden. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Robert, when he loses Robert Jeffers.
Yes. Wow. That's news. I didn't read that. That's news to me.
Yep. Well, you weren't watching MSNBC as recently as I was. All right. Let's get to more local news. We have a lot of New York City news. First of all, we told you about the case of the trans woman in the Bronx, Linda Dominguez, who was walking home from work one night across a park, probably after dark, and there she is. And the cops swooped in and arrested her on the grounds that it was illegal to walk across the park in the dark.
Not the other people that she was with.
Exactly. She was the only one arrested. And she was horribly harassed. She showed them her ID in an attempt to be helpful, both her birth ID and her name change ID, and they charged her with false personation for having two different IDs. This is the way things work in New York City.
So they blocked her, and she got a settlement of $30,000. The police. Yeah. Pledged to do better training. Good luck with that.
Well, they said they're going to reissue the guidelines they have issued for years on how you're supposed to interact with trans people.
Well,
oh yeah, we'll send that out again.
Ms. Dominguez is an activist. She works with Make the Road New York, which does a lot of work of transgender advocacy.
Well, congratulations to her. Now, meanwhile, the NYPD is attacking, beating, and arresting protest marchers who are totally peaceful. It's unbelievable. And the mayor is defending the police and saying to us, oh, you just don't know everything that's going on. I would get upset.
Oh, we do know what's going on, because yeah. Council member Richie Torres was on the show last week, now going to be a Congress member, released an investigation into this guy. We have a picture of him. NYPD Deputy Inspector James Francis Cobel, K-O-B-E-L, commanding officer of the Department's Office of Equal Opportunity, 28-year veteran of the force. He was online using a pseudonym, spewing the most vile, racist, misogynistic, and homophobic posts imaginable. And that's saying something. He referred to people of color as savages, animals, and worse, women as sluts, Hasidim as animals. hoped that out gay speaker Corey Johnson of the council ends up a victim of crime in a local bathhouse looking for assault with a friendly weapon. I mean, this guy, and, you know, they ought to investigate everybody on this listserv that they have among the police, where they all let their hair down and say how they really feel about us. So don't give me this crap about, you know, there's just a few bad apples.
And when I hear the politicians, the moderate Democrats, blaming progressive Democrats for slogans like defund the police and how dare you, you know, and you will cost us the election here, there, and everywhere. Well, how about talking about the real issues and educating people? You don't like that slogan? Let's talk about the real issues.
And if you want to talk about who's defunding the police, it's the Republican Party, which refuses to pass any aid to states and localities if you want to keep the police forces employed, because they're having to be laid off now. If you care about that, they're the defunders, literal defunders of the police, the Republican Party.
Now, for years, we've been saying that 40% of the homeless youth on the streets of New York are LGBTQ. And surveys have borne that out. Well, now we have a new report from New York City's Administration for Children's Services, and they looked at the foster kids population and found that at least a third of them are LGBTQ, that they are in the system because they've been mistreated by their parents and by the system, and that they get fewer family placements. More of them are homeless than straight youth. They have very negative interactions with the NYPD. Do we smell a theme here? And that they are depressed and hopeless.
Well, I mean, so much more needs to be done there. And with all, you know, with all these gay officials, you would think that we could get more attention to it and get it done. We better whip through the rest of the news.
All right. I just want to note the passing of Paul Shanley at 89. He was the Massachusetts priest who was the subject of the Spotlight movie and Boston Globe thing.
In the early days, he was a priest supporting gay rights.
Exactly. It was complicated. He was very supportive of the community, but he also turns out to have been a severe child abuser.
Right.
And congratulations to Etsy, which featured a black gay couple in a new Christmas ad going home to visit the family of one of them and getting a lot of support. That was pointed out by a viewer, and I watched it. It's very good. You can Google Etsy black gay couple ad. International news.
Well, I would alert you that the Transgender Day of Remembrance is November 20th.
Yes.
Then in Nevada, they removed the state constitutional ban on same-sex marriage and replaced it with language requiring the state to recognize all marriages.
In the Netherlands, they have now pinned down this organized network selling documents and training to Ugandans so they can claim they're gay for asylum purposes. But they've only found 36 of the 250 cases of Ugandans claiming gay asylum, so I'm not sure how widespread it is.
In Bangkok, Thailand...
Activists are worried that authentic people could be rejected.
Sure, of course. In Bangkok, hundreds rallied for democracy and equal rights for LGBTQ people. They also said their objective was to stimulate the economy by dispersing it to shops after the rally. They're very unhappy with the current regime, and they want the Red Cross to accept LGBT blood donations.
In Italy, the lower house of the parliament has approved a hate crimes law that protects LGBTQ people and women against violence, inciting violence. Some are worried about free speech problems, but Italy has not done much to protect us, so that's a step forward.
It passed 265 to 193, and yes, a big step. And we learned this week that Pope John Paul II knew about the accusations of sexual abuse by Bishop Ted McCarrick for 20 years and chose not to believe them and promoted him to Archbishop of Washington and then Cardinal. And of course, John Paul II is a saint, but I don't know if he's going to have to be removed from that heaven.
The Congress of Europe has sent a fact-finding mission to Poland to look into all the horrible things happening to LGBT people there.
And Lukasz opened up the first school for trans students.
In Toronto, a trans woman, Coco, age 30, died in the hospital after being apprehended by police in a mental health crisis. Another death at the hands of police.
In Brazil, I'm sorry. In Brazil, the evil president, Bolsonaro, was talking about COVID, and he says, we have to stop being a country of, I'm going to say the word, fags. We have to face up to it and fight. I hate this faggot stuff. Yeah. How about manning up and dying of COVID? Is that basically your suggestion? Of course, the fight is to get everybody to wear masks.
Does he have a gay son?
I don't know about a gay son.
I think so, but I could be wrong. In Hong Kong, LGBT activists are planning an online pride parade this Saturday because the authorities have refused to respond to the application they made months ago for a march in the streets. More legalization of same-sex marriage in Mexico, court date in India on marriage next week, and Estonia next year is going to have a referendum to try to forbid same-sex marriage.
Next year in Estonia.
Yeah. Right. In London, we lost an American, Marguerite Littman, 90 years old. She was a fantastic AIDS activist, starting the AIDS Charitable Trust. You see her there with her friend, Princess Diana, who was a major contributor to it. She was friends with Truman Capote, David Hockney, Christopher Isherwood, and Don Bacardi.
He was the model for Holly Golightly in Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Now, you wonder about that because Holly Golightly was a prostitute.
So I know. Well,
sex worker.
Well, that's where they took the character.
Yeah. But she was born in Monroe, Louisiana, and people were just knocked out by her all her life.
And her trust was rolled into the Elton John AIDS Foundation. He said she was in the vanguard of the war on AIDS at a time when people with AIDS were just shunned.
Moving on to more AIDS news. New news on cabotegravir. We told you a month or so ago about a study of this new preventive HIV vaccine, which was being tested against the Truvada pills in gay men, and that they'd had very good results, that the vaccine was better than Truvada. It's an injection you have every 2 months. Well, now they have stopped a study of it in Africa among women in 7 countries because it is so good and so much better than Truvada. Now the question is access, getting it to people.
Yeah, and half of all new HIV infections in 2019 worldwide were among women.
So, of course, this also means that we have to redouble our efforts around condoms because STDs are still an issue. But this is great news to have a preventive HIV vaccine.
5 minutes for entertainment news, yes?
Oh.
Okay. Ryan Murphy, who is producing The Prom for Netflix, I didn't realize this. He went to his high school in Indiana, and he did go to high school in Indiana. And when he was there, a guidance counselor discouraged him from going to his prom with his boyfriend. So when he saw this play on Broadway, this musical, I'm producing it, he said, because that's the reason.
Well, in other musical production news, the New York City Lesbian and Gay Big Apple Corps Marching Band is jumping up and down because they have been invited to participate in this year's Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade on November 26th that you see every year on NBC, I guess.
They said been their 40-year dream to be in the Macy's Day Parade.
Well, they've been in all the pride parades. They've been at the gay games. They've been everywhere.
Well, one year when we couldn't get gay and lesbian rights in New York, a bunch of people from the Coalition for Lesbian and Gay Rights dressed up as a turkey, a big fat turkey, and tried to be at the end of the parade, but the police stopped it.
They already have a turkey at the end of the parade.
We were Well, I thought it was Santa Claus, but
Santa Claus, I think, rides a turkey.
and once it was.
Have you ever been to the Thanksgiving Day parade?
Once at the very end, because I was clearing out an apartment on Central Park West, and so I stayed in New York, yeah. And I went to it. Once I went to it.
All right, one more news story: Viggo Mortensen.
Yes.
Excellent actor. He is directing a new movie and playing gay in it. Falling is the name of the movie. It's about a gay couple who the father of one of them, Viggo's character, his father in the movie, comes to visit, and he's a demented, racist, homophobic dad.
So, welcome home, Dad.
Yeah, so.
And goes to live with his son in L.A. from the farm.
But people are upset that Viggo is playing gay when he is not gay. And
he said, "Look, I wouldn't play the role of my Chinese American husband in the movie." But then again, David Cronenberg is cast as a proctologist, and he's not one of those. So I mean, actors, it's all very complicated. It's especially sensitive around transgender roles these days, but yes.
Well, it is a question of competence. You know, you can say actors are actors and anybody should play anything, but are you really qualified to play something, not just by your description, but by your lived experience? So,
no question. I do want to say I'm going to miss Alex Trebek on Jeopardy, though he did tape shows all the way through Christmas, so we can still see him. He died at 80 last week. And just this past week, the answer was, who is Larry Kramer? Who's the person who wrote The Normal Heart. They were integrating a lot of gay clues in there in the last couple of years.
Well, they're getting with the program like everything else. And go ahead.
I did go to that Hockney exhibit at the Morgan, the first time I've been inside a museum, although I don't know if I'm going to do it again, given the fact that there's a surge in New York. And it was delightful, intimate portraits of his lover, Gregory Evans, and his friend Cecilia, and a guy he worked with. And it shows them all through their lives. It was just a lovely thing to be at. And they don't let too many people in. Everybody wears a mask, so I didn't feel unsafe.
I think we're almost out of time. I just
40 seconds.
I want to thank Maren Johns for agreeing to come back next week and give me a week off. And I know Andy's excited by that. I won't probe that too deeply. But
No. Come on. Listen, Anne, this show is always easier to do with you.
Whatever. I think we're done on that note. Goodbye.
Thanks.
Someone will see you next week.
We will.